And welcome to Wiki Politiki, a show designed to bring right and left front and center, to turn the funk into function, and leave the junk at the junction. At a time when so much political discourse is heat without light, Wiki Politiki shines the light of love and truth on the darkened corridors of power, and then brings leading solutionaries into conversation to light the way forward together. Your host is Steve Behrman, author, comedian, and political and spiritual uncommentator. You might know Steve as his cosmic comic alter ego, Swami Beyond Ananda, or as the author of a more serious book with cellular biologist Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. If you recognize that crisis precipitates evolution, and judging by the current crises, the chances of precipitation are 100%, this show is for you. Welcome to the Evolutionary Uprising. Now, here is your host, Steve Behrman.
Well, hello, this is Behrman, and welcome to Wiki Politiki, where we bring left and right, front and center, to face the music and dance together. We're here today, a very special day. We're going to be talking about the future of children, providing a love-based education for every child. You know, there's an old joke that I've heard that's not that funny anymore, but, it's been said that we know that the world has turned right side up. When all of the children and all of the teachers have all of the resources they require for nurturing and education, and when the Air Force wants a new bomber, they have to run a bake sale. Okay, so that's been a joke for a while, and I think at this point we're starting to see how much damage comes from the non-nurturance that's been going on, and we're at the point now where we really do need a change. My guest today is Phil Moore. He's the author of a book, The Future of Children, Providing a Love-Based Education for Every Child. It's a paradigm shift. And I have to tell you that I have a personal connection and a personal stake in this conversation. About 45 years ago, my girlfriend Jackie and I drove to Michigan from Washington, D.C., and we landed at this amazing little school where we heard that her friend who was a teacher here canoed to work every morning. And what we found was an amazing school in nature, a very unusual place for children, where every child is known and where the structure is in the right place and the freedom is in the right place. I remember that first year at the school actually watching as a wind generator was put up, first school I ever saw that had wind power. And then a few years later, solar power. And if you could do solar power in Michigan, then you're on to something. So what I've noticed over the years, and I've been friends with Phil for 45 years, I've been peripherally connected to the school. I've watched it grow. I've watched it change. And I've admired how different it is from every other place that I've ever been that relates to children. And I wish I could say that there were more and more and more schools like Upland Hills, but it is a totally unique experiment. So today we're going to be talking about how this school is different, how it's developed, how it was, some of the trials it's been through, and now what the teachings are that can be shared at a very, very pivotal time in human history, a time where, as Swami would say, we have to shift or get off the pot. So this is a school for paradigm shifting. So welcome, Phil Moore.
Yeah, thank you so much, Steve. It's great to have you back home.
That's right. I am actually at Upland Hills. We're doing this from Upland Hills. I got to meet some of the kids who are grandchildren of some of the people that I knew when I was here at Upland Hills. It's a thriving place. The thing that was most amazing to me is that they've set up a kitchen. A trailer kitchen where they provide three delicious, healthy meals every day for the children. And this is totally new, and it certainly fits with a place that has been involved in farming, in growing food, making maple syrup, picking wild food, et cetera, for over 45 years. So, Phil, why don't you tell us a little bit about how you found Upland Hills School and how it's developed over the years. a big story, but one should start somewhere.
Yeah, I found this school through my own school experience. I went to a public school in Royal Oak, Michigan, and I knew as early as second grade that there was something rigged about the game of school, and I knew this because I had I was a very introverted child and very sensitive. I was always told that I was overly sensitive. And there was a teacher that we had who would sometimes use ridicule and sarcasm. And I just knew there was something wrong with that. And usually she would guide her sarcasm to kids that I had already formed a bond with. Douglas Baker, who was a little overweight and stuttered, or to Wesley Youngblood, who had a brace on, a polio brace. And I just knew there was something wrong about this, that this teacher should not be allowed to teach. So there was an injustice, and there was a big lump in my throat. I didn't know what to do about it, but it was an early awareness. And as I went through school, I was just clear there was enough about what was wrong with the game of school to know that I needed to do something about it. And it was, in a way, Buckminster Fuller who helped transform a lot of my observations about what's wrong with education and what's wounding children and why it's an industrial model that was built for another era and all of the things that I had accumulated to that time. Bucky said, you never change things by fighting the existing reality. To change something, build a new model that makes the existing one obsolete. And that really was my invitation to burn bridges, which I did when I did my student teaching, right on my placement, my teaching placement. It says, Philip Moore is unfit to teach in public schools.
What a recommendation.
Yeah, so that bridge was already built. And so I was very interested in what was going on in the alternative school network. And at that time, as you know, there was a movement called the Free School Movement. And many, many schools began between 1965-66 and 1973. Perhaps 98% of them died within a very short period of time. Our school happens to be one that somehow not only survived, but is thriving at this point. We began in 1971. I think you arrived around 1973. And so the school is now 100 kids and 34 acres. And because Bucky also urged us to always do more with less, we tried to eliminate debt every moment that we were here. And so a lot of the buildings were built by staff members and by people who are closely related to our community. And we have very, very little debt for what we have in place at this time. And the entire experience of the school has been a wonderful one for me. And at some point, I had a near-death experience. I had a heart attack in the middle of the medicine wheel, which is a great place to have a heart attack because you're kind of supported by that beautiful medicine. And during the operation, an infection dropped in, and I almost died from that infection. And in my recovery, it became clear to me that a transition needed to occur. I had been the founder director of the school for over 40 years, and it was time for a new director to be put on board and for me to see what the world was like when I dropped the role of director of Upland Hills School and director teacher in the early years. We never had enough money to pay somebody who was a director, so I was always wearing more than one hat. And so after my heart attack in 2008, we made the transition and did it very gradually because a number of the teachers here, by that time we were so closely bonded that it was apparent to me that if we all left at the same time, that would not be healthy for the school. So we went through a mentorship program, and we found a new director. And over the course of about 6 years, from 2008 to about 2013, 2014, we made this huge transition, and I entered into a new stage of my development, which Ram Dass helped me with, because he said, now you can be led by something else outside of your role. So you can drop your role and listen to your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has been the last 4 years of my life. That's exactly what I've been doing. And listening to my soul really has been such an exciting experience of flow and consciousness and wanting to take on more initiatives. And so that's the short answer.
But, you know, there's so much to being that role model, right? As opposed to telling kids how to be, to actually show what it means to be an alive and awake and vital elder. What always struck me about Upland Hill School is how different it was from these other free schools. And I think you said it in the quote from Bucky, that it was not so much about fighting some other system, but it was creating an alternative that made that system obsolete. So I want to poke a little bit around in there. What was it that actually allowed this school to be not one of those rebellious schools, but a school where something actually got built and got created, where you were building something together as a community rather than simply affiliating because you were against something?
Right. Well, the big differences occurred when we took some guidance from people like Bucky Fuller, but also from Ram Dass and from Krishnamurti and from Jean Houston and from Margaret Mead. There were lots of wonderful people who were giving us hints, you know, suggestions that resonated very deeply with our own intuition. From Margaret Mead, we got the thing about prefigurative and postfigurative and peer group learning. We understood that we needed to do things like that in our curriculum. You know, from Krishnamurti, we got self-intelligence and the importance of that intrapersonal intelligence aspect. And from Bucky, we got things like every child is born a genius. And it was his conviction and his experience that our schools de-geniused that spirit. And so we had these great wise elders giving us very strong hints as to the direction that we needed to enter into. And because we grew out of the 60s generation, we were more inclined towards communitarian values, but we also loved the individual. So we had both of those things. It was not an either-or situation. It was a both-and. Both we can be completely unique, and we are. Each of us have our own soul prints. And so being loved into being became our mantra. We would have the child in front of us, and we would learn from listening deeply to that child how to love that child into being. And then, of course, we had this wonderful experience called summer camp. I did have a couple of experiences in sleepaway camp, summer camp, when I was young that were really not pleasant at all. The YMCA camp that I went to first was run in a military style, and you had to have stand at attention, and it was right dress, left dress, and for me, it was like undress, you know. And so I bailed out of that pretty quickly. But I did have an amazing experience with a group of people in the Hiawatha National Forest in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. It was called Pioneer Camp, and it was run by a social worker who had read Summerhill and was deeply impressed with that book that was written by A.S. Neal and was a revolution unto itself and really the grandfather of the free school movement. Most likely would have been A.S. Neal. And so this camp was run on the philosophy of here we are in the middle of this amazingly huge forest, and our job is to have fun and for the kids to learn and flourish and to come back, want to come back year after year. So a lot of our curriculum here was developed from that experience. As a matter of fact, two of the staff members in the early years of Upland Hill School, my wife Karen Moore and my good friend John Yabruian, came from that summer camp experience. And what we knew, because we had experienced, is what community feels like and what the fullness of community is about. And the more diversity in a community, the greater its survival potential. So our afternoon curriculum is really very much about here are the things that are offered in the seasons. So So we're always teaching place. The natural world is a primary teacher here at Upland Hill School. So in the fall, we teach fall. Mm-hmm. And in the winter, we teach winter. And in the spring, we teach spring. And then those afternoon classes, kids of all ages are choosing some classes that they're going to be in. And they'll be in wild foods for the entire springtime trimester, you know, for those 10 weeks, if it's Monday at 1 o'clock. And a lot of this is in my book because people have wanted to know about the curriculum. But before I get into the details of the curriculum, I think the most important thing is to say that it's really about context. And so that I would say the word semanticy, which learning in context is what it means, you know, that is really what we were doing very differently right from the beginning. We were always thinking about everything embedded within a context. And our context was Bucky's idea of how to make the world work for 100% of humanity without disadvantaging the natural world.
Wow. Well, you know, the one thing I remember from my 1 year teaching here, we had the morning meeting group. And at the end of the semester, every child got a conference with the parents. You had a conference with the parents about every child, but it wasn't just about their academic work. It was really about the whole child. And I remember coming home from that, and I got this feeling, this sadness that came over me. And the sadness was, wow, I wish I'd had somebody explain me to my parents. I wish that I had adults who knew me the way that we learn to know each of these children. And, you know, having the school has been in existence for, you know, more than 45 years, you've had the experience of seeing what children do in their lives, how they live their lives once when they've had an education like this.
Yeah, we have rocket scientists, and we have lawyers who are, instead of working for the...
Oh, we're ready to take a break. Okay, well, we'll be back, and we'll be back with Phil Moore, and we're going to be talking what children have done in their lives, and then about the future.
Connecting you with the best of the conscious minds in the world. Om Times Radio. IOM FM. Om Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. Om Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Are you done with the daily barrage of negativity? Ready for some positivity? Creations Magazine has been inspiring the soul for over 30 years, delivering thought-provoking and solution-driven articles, essays, and poetry that inspire you to enjoy a vibrant life. Holistic health, personal and spiritual growth, relationships, the environment, and so much more. Read us online or order a subscription, creationsmagazine.com.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo. We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day. People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle you to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything. I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is Steve Behrman. We're back with Phil Moore, who is the author of The Future of Children, and for 40 years plus was director of Upland Hill School. And we were talking about what happened when children have a love-based education? What do they, how do they live their lives? So maybe you can tell us something about children who've been here, who've gone on to do other things.
Well, for one thing, they live in our hearts. You know, the teachers here at school have these children in their hearts, and the children know that. So they come back as adults, and they want to show us their new lover. They want us to be at the weddings, and, you know, it's so beautiful to have 1,000 children in your heart. And then to fall into the trap of the dominant paradigm, I would say we have medical doctors, and, you know, we have doctors and lawyers and Indian chiefs, and go on and on about their accomplishments. But I really don't want to say much about that, because that's true. But the important thing, you know, is who they are as human beings and how dedicated they are to serving others. And there are so many beautiful stories about that that really bring tears to my eyes, because I sense in them this deep commitment to work on behalf of all of humanity, and that no matter what they're doing, whether they're, you know, Beth Grossman in New York City turning down after she's won lawsuit after lawsuit for the EEOC, and then she gets these job offers by the large firms. You know, you can make 4 times what you make at the EEOC, and here's your own corner office in your downtown Manhattan. We're sick of fighting against you. We want you to join our law firm, to which she says, I'm exactly where I want to be, doing exactly what I want to be doing. So there's stories like that. Some of them, you know, subtle and small, some of them larger like that one. But it's just, those are the things that really mean the most to us, because they're true to their values. The paradigm shift that we're working towards in the initiatives of my company, TrimTab, which is www.trimtab.in, are really about a new educational paradigm. And what that feels like, and we experimented with it here, but we want to go beyond what's happened here as well. And one of the things is that communitarian feeling, that we have the uniqueness of the individual and the sense that we must be doing something on behalf of Spaceship Earth. And so that was very, very important. And the natural world is a primary teacher, is really the pioneer. Biomimicry and all of those things that have emerged recently are very, very close to the heart and soul of what this next paradigm is about. But most importantly are the bonds between people and the bond between the natural world and ourselves. And these intrapersonal bonds and this sense of belonging and community is the essential aspect of the next educational paradigm. Right now, as we all know, this is a horrific crisis in schools where they're just not only unsafe, and we've had all these drills, even when we have these drills, and by the way, parenthetically, that's one of the reasons I knew it was time for me to step down from the position of the director of the school. I had had enough run-ins with local officials about how many, you know, drills needed to be performed in the course of a year. When I started my career as director, it was fire drills and tornado drills. But at the end, it was shooters on site. You know, there were other drills that we were doing. And there was just a part of me that was just not able to kind of make that transition. And I knew a younger generation. Of course, children have to be safe. And that's the essential aspect of a next paradigm educational system. And so it would be that safety would be implied and implicate. And what we worked on very hard here is creating that kind of community, and that's what really nourishes children more than anything else. In order to be loved into being, you have to be part of a larger tribe. And being part of a larger tribe doesn't mean that you're on a baseball team and you're making $1.8 million and someone else is making $300,000. It means that you're deeply connected not only to each other, to the teachers and to the parents and to the board members, but you're also deeply connected to the natural world. So a paradigm shift like that means that we would have to really be much in much smaller group sizes, and also figuring out very creative ways to use schools that exist. Because, you know, I have no idea what the recipe is going to be, but really we have to disrupt education as it currently is. You know, and in that disruption, we have to discover all the innovative ways that we can do learning, and then we can get meaningful content. But I think more importantly than those things is we have to be more small tribes. 100, maybe 200 is too large, I'm not sure. But it would be something like that. And that's what we were able to experience here. And what you discover in that is there are miracles that emerge. You change, you grow, the kids are changing and growing. You're always being taught by the children. They're always giving you way more than you could possibly imagine. You know, some people say that, you know, Karen looks so young and she's about to turn 77 years old. And what's the secret, you know, of her youthful look at the parents? And, you know, we could say genetics, etc., but the fountain of youth is children who are lit up and alive, which is very different than children who are bored and dejected and distracted. And so much of what's going on now in the initiatives that I'm doing in the fourth year of my rewirement is that I'm really involved in working with teachers and grandparents and young seekers in order to become a conscious teacher. And that really has to do a lot with meditation and a lot with going slower and developing very close bonds and learning how to live in the unknown. One of the things that I'm really clear about after all these years of being in education is the longer that I live, the more I'm aware of what I don't know. And there's a deep sense of humility that goes along with that. And I believe that we are entering a time where we don't know what we don't know. And that's what we have to prepare children for. So I remember Werner Erhard once saying, what we know is the smallest infinitesimal domain. What we know we don't know is only slightly larger. I don't know how to speak Mandarin fluently, you know. So, we can say these are the, I don't know, you know, quantum physics as well as I would like to know quantum physics. So you just expand that very infinitesimally small domain of what we know, slightly larger. The huge domain, what we don't know. And this is the world we need to prepare children for, is how to live into that unknown. And that's why silence and meditation, Amy Edelstein and Jeff Carrera, the two people who helped publish in Emergence Education, the book, The Future of Children, and their books, Paradigm Shifting and the Conscious Classroom. You know, this is where I think the real front line of the next paradigm of education is in developing conscious teachers.
You know, it's interesting that what really is called for now, there seems to be an absence of the sacred, an absence of a unified idea of what is sacred. There hasn't been a cosmology that we can go, yeah, that's how really things are, and here's where you fit. I can see that in the latter part of your book, and you're talking about evolution and children, you're talking about an evolution story that I would say is bigger than religion and bigger than non-religion. So why don't you say something about that?
Yeah, you know, this wedding that we just had, the royal wedding, which was such a beautiful moment for so much of the earth, and there was such a unifying experience. In that brilliant sermon that was given, the end of that sermon, the pastor, and I don't remember his name, the Episcopalian priest, said, quoted Teilhard de Chardin. And for those of us who are into being in the evolutionary story that Teilhard de Chardin was definitely a proponent of, and way before his time. And then Thomas Berry later carried that on, and Brian Swim, one of our people that comes here to do Conscious Teachers, is a nun by the name of Gail Worcello, who has the only monastery that I'm aware of that is a Thomas Berry monastery. The song that you heard rehearsed recently was inspired by Thomas Berry. So we do have a cosmology here at the school that is really both and. It's both this spiritual, sacred story, and it is very science-based. And so there's that marriage of that, and I think that, you know, people like Brian Swim and his amazing programs and his amazing teaching, that's really the story that we're using in part here at the school. And being on evolution's edge means that we wake up one morning, instead of thinking that we're, you know, like Jean-Paul Sartre, insignificant specks of dust on the edge of an insignificant sun, solar system, on the edge of a galaxy, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We wake up one morning and we realize, oh, we are the universe. Our consciousness and our self-reflection puts us in the center of being evolutionaries, and it's not we. You know, it's not the little me. Bucky used to always talk about the distinction between the little me and the big me. When he was here in 1980 and we were in the Ecological Awareness Center, he was doing one of his Thinking Out Loud, you know, talks, and it was just amazing, and I was taking in the entire room and thinking, oh my God, my mentor is here in this building that we tried to build, the first net energy building. It was made out of stone, and it had a sod roof, and it's now a classroom and wind and solar. And he turns to me, and I'm standing at the back of the room, and he said, and make sure you don't get carried away with yourself. Don't get carried away with that little me. So there was this ego lesson when I turned my head to see who is he talking to. Nobody was behind me. You know, it's the big me that we're talking about, the cosmic me. It is something far beyond us. Yes, I could tell this story like I found the school and this is where I came from. I think it would be just as easy to tell the story as I had been drawn here all along, that somehow I was meant to find this place without knowing, and I was led here by something that I still have no idea exactly how it works. I sometimes refer to it as the big mystery, you know, and that mystery is what brought me here. And that's the mystery, the sacredness that we need to align with in creating a shift in the educational paradigm.
You know, there is that sense of synchronicity when you're in that flow. And we got a few minutes before our break, but I want you to tell the story because I love this story so much, about how you actually came to the school, what the synchronous situation that brought you here.
Well, I would like to say that, you know, my experience of that word synchronicity is really that it's more a field than something that an individual has.
Of course.
And it's leaning into that field that allows it to happen, and it's available to all of us.
Yeah.
You know, so we have all experienced synchronicity and synchrodestiny, et cetera. My particular thing was I'm in the south of Spain with Karen and Nina, my wife and my daughter, who I adopted. She's my stepchild. I met her when she was 3 and a half, and I fell in love with Karen and her. So I fell in love with two people in 1968, 50 years ago. And we were living in a small fishing town, fishing village, in the south of Spain. Fuengirola was the name of the town. And it was an international place. It was a great place for those of us who were out there seeking to live very inexpensively. And at some point, Ken Webster shows up in a village close by. Ken Webster was a camp counselor with Karen and I in that summer camp I referenced, the Pioneer Camp. And we meet each other in a Kresge store. I'm going to look for French fries, and I look at the back of Ken, and I think, God, that Spaniard looks a lot like Ken Webster. And I get closer and closer and then realize, no, it's not a Spaniard. That's Ken, you know. And then he tells me, he says something like, you know how you kept talking about wanting to do a different kind of school and an experimental school, and that's what you would spend nights talking about when we'd go to Jack Pine Bar and when we'd spend time around the campfire? My parents are starting a school on Upland Hills Farm. That's how I first found out about Upland Hills Farm. And I thought, wow, you know, we're still traveling, you know. So we Nina's kindergarten year was that year. And so we still had 6 more months of traveling. But that thought never left my mind. And it was interesting, just as we were about to leave Spain, I was approached by this international committee, who was just friends of ours. One couple was from South Africa, another couple was from Ireland, another couple was from Northern California, and they said, why don't you do your school here? It's so cheap living in Spain, and we have this wonderful house right on the same block that you're living in, and we can use that. We're already using it as a Montessori. Why don't you start your school here? And then we were visited by the Guardia Civil the next day. And it was really clear to me that Franco was still in charge, and this was not the right place for us to start a school. And then I kept thinking about, I traveled from Maine all the way to California looking for a job with that credential that said I was unfit to teach, and then came back to Michigan, and then remembered what Ken had said, and drove Nina and Karen out here on an October day, about 3 weeks after school had started. And we enrolled Nina without having any money, not knowing where the money was going to come from. And then by November, I was hired as a teacher. And by February, I was asked to be the director.
And the rest is mystery. We'll be talking about the rest of this mystery when we get back from this break. We're going to talk more about how this actually gets translated into a system that desperately needs some help. We're talking with Phil Moore. Children.
Free your mind with Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
Hello, I'm Lisa Berry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living, a chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
The Shift Network. Presenting transformative programs and events to help you awaken to your full potential so that together we can build the more beautiful world our hearts know is possible. Our classes support you in finding and cultivating your gifts and in bringing those gifts to the world to create tangible change and connect us as global citizens. Go to theshiftnetwork.com or follow the link on the Wiki Politiki sponsors page.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
We're back with Phil Moore in this final segment, and we're talking about the future of children, and really the future of human life on this planet, essentially. And we are at a point where this wonderful little bright light experiment that has been this little shining beacon, how do we take this and translate, proliferate, this particular way of being with children, this way of creating safety, of connection, community, individual thrival in the context of a community and serving that community. How do we bring this into the world at large now that we've done it in the world that's small?
Well, we live into a question that's bigger than ourselves. And we wake up each morning with an intention and with a deep sense of humility. And we pray rather than worry. I came to prayer here at Upland Hills School because we had a beautiful succession of Lakota teachers who taught us about the sweat lodge and the medicine wheel and shared their language and their songs with us. And learning how to pray in a sweat lodge really changed things for me, because it was so often that we were told that if someone prays your prayer, then all you have to say is aho mitakiwasa to all my relations. And so rather than have worry about what's going to happen in the future, it's really to create prayers for a vision that we have yet to realize, but we know is possible. So whether it's the human potential movement, there's so many different, aspects of the future pressing into the present. And I think, for me, the knowledge that 7% or 8% of humanity at this point is moving into second-tier consciousness, for people who know the spiral dynamics map, which is a beautiful map, that's a lot of people. If there are 7.5 billion people on the planet at present, 7%, 8%, there's more aliveness on the planet in that sense than there ever has been. So living into a big question and having these prayers. And so in the end of the book, or towards the end of the book, I thought it was important to go back to a prayer and to utter it on behalf of others, for people who don't have a good relationship with prayer, or this is not your prayer. Just like in any sweat lodge, it's your prayer, so this is your opportunity to speak from that place. And for others who resonate so deeply with the prayer, this is my prayer too, especially when you receive any kind of acknowledgement or compliment in a sweat lodge, the appropriate response that's been modeled by the Lakota elders that we've had, Jorge Arenavar to speak of one, and Wallace Black Elk speak of another. You get a compliment and you answer, may I be worthy. So here's the future of children. The future of children depends on us being led by the sacred child. This sacred child lives in every one of us. This sacred child lives in the children that have come before us, the ones who have yet to be born. This sacred child is not separate from us. She is us. This sacred child comes through us and yet does not belong to us. She belongs instead to the cosmos. This sacred child is the reason we must change our story. This sacred child holds the potential for the future that is always pressing in to the present. We must learn to listen to her as she charts a new direction for our species. Mm.
Yes, indeed. And I think that's really what it is. It's part of the not knowing. I mean, part of not knowing, because you don't know, it doesn't mean you don't have a direction. It doesn't mean you don't have intention. You have a very strong and focused intention, and yet the humility to know that the universe knows best, ultimately, and that all you can do is set your course in that direction. So now, in this phase of your life, as your rewirement, as you call it, what's your work now? You have this trim tab. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yes. Well, first, let me explain what a trim tab is. Bucky has on his gravestone, "Call me Trim Tab," and so what he did is he dedicated his life to being a trim tab. A trim tab on an ocean liner is a very small rudder on the outside of the very large rudder. What it does is it shifts ever so slightly, creates a low pressure and moves the entire rudder, and thereby moves the entire ocean liner. And so trim tab is a metaphor for what our species needs at this moment in order to be redirected. The dominant paradigm, with all its trappings of success and billionaires and in all of the technology we have, has really done a terrible job of destroying this sacred Gaia Mother Earth. And so we need a course adjustment, and we need a realignment, and that's the trim tab. So I asked Allegra Fuller Snyder, who will be my next guest on the webinar that I'm doing on the future of children, if we could use that, if I could use the, you know, www.trimtab, and she put me in touch with her son, Jamie.
That's Bucky's daughter.
Bucky's daughter, yeah. And she put me in touch with Bucky's grandson, Jamie, and they gave me their blessing to use TrimTab. And so then it became, what were the initiatives that I wanted to work with, and who did I want to work with? So Lisa Lee, who was involved with Renaissance Unity, is one of my partners in it. And so what we're doing is we're doing something called Conscious Teachers. That's a three-weekend experience here. And one of those weekends, you spend a day at Upland Hills and you get to see what it's like to be in a new paradigm of education. And the next one coming up is coming up in June, June 8th, 9th, and 10th. And it's open to anyone who would like to be there for the weekend. If you'd like to come for just one day, Saturday is open. And Amy Edelstein from the Emergence Education Press, her book, The Conscious Classroom, and Lisa Lee, my partner, are going to teach that weekend. And we always have it at St. Benedict's Monastery, which is really within walking distance of Upland Hills School. So it gives us full access to the school, to the forest. It was the last walk that Ram Dass took without a wheelchair, was that hike up this little Michigan mountain to St. Benedict's Monastery. And so that's one of the initiatives, Conscious Teachers. This one is called Conscious Teachers 3.0. And then this summer, on July 19th to the 22nd, I've been invited to go back to summer camp. Only this is a different kind of summer camp, because the intention of the Hollyhock Institute on Cortez Island in British Columbia is very much like the Esalen Institute in the United States. And they've asked me to do a workshop for 4 days called The Future of Children. And again, we want to create the experience of the new paradigm. We don't want to talk about it. We will, of course, but we want to co-create something that has never been before. So yes, it's a summer camp, and yes, we'll have a campfire, and we'll be fed farm to table, and we'll have all of those wonderful things, lots of music, because we'll be bringing the songbook of Upland Hills School to that particular event. But we're also going to be working on the synergetic geometry of the design of the next paradigm of education. And people in the circle will be co-creating, because when you don't know what you don't know, you can't come with a very specific agenda. You'll leave here and you'll know this bullet point, and this bullet point. To me, it's just like a return home and a new vibration, a new octave. That this is summer camp, and that's why I'm so excited about it. But this is summer camp in the next octave. There will be people in the circle who have gone to Upland Hills School. Some of those 1,000 people that I hold in my heart, I've invited to come, and they've said yes. There are past teachers who are going to be there. There are current teachers who are going to be there. And then there are people who want to start their own love-based school. And there are people who want to give their time and talent and treasure to a paradigm shift. And so we already know in the 24 or 25 people out of a possible 45 that can be there, that there are all of these people and three mystery people. So I don't know who they are now and how they got to this, but they're going to do that. So that's going to be, you know, all you have to go to the website, trimtab.in, and you'll find out information on Conscious Teachers and that. And then there's the book. The book is now out, but word of mouth is what we need to spread that, and opportunities like this. I'm so grateful to you, Steve, a dear friend and a colleague who has been a voice for this book needs to be written.
I think we started this in 1995, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Or earlier.
Without you, it would have never been born. And, you know, so you helped me so often in trying to get this out in written form. And now that it's out, we need other people to know about it. And that can happen through Emergence Education Press and through Amazon. It's available on Amazon. It's also available from my website as well.
It really is. I mean, I've been a witness to this book for years, and it's matured. You know, it wasn't the right time 20 years ago. It's the right time now. And part of that maturity is speaking to the evolution, the paradigm shift that has to take place at this very moment. If you have children, grandchildren, if you know children, if you were a child, you're going to find tremendous inspiration and value in this book called The Future of Children. You know, there's a lot of books out there. You know, anybody can write a book these days. And because of that, sometimes, you know, really excellent books that don't go through this processing of, you know, becoming a bestseller in quote marks and so on, they don't go through that process of being designed to do that. This book is an extraordinary experience that needs to be experienced by more people. If we had children being known the way the children at Upland Hills were known, and being allowing themselves to express their greatest expression and give their greatest gifts in the context of community, not to diminish individual accomplishment, but you said it right at the beginning, context. And the context for this book is love. It, as you said earlier, you know, the summer camp experience. What kid doesn't want to go to summer camp? And yet, this is a school where children learn. They really do. It's not just about summer camp. And yet, it has that sense of being a place where children want to come because they know that they're known and loved in the space. So find this book online. It's The Future of Children. Philip Moore is the author. We'll have a link at our website, and I strongly suggest that you go get it. Any last words for this conversation? Something that you want to share with our audience?
Just a tremendous amount of gratitude for the opportunity to talk with you and to be inspired by one of our early teachers, and who inspires me to this day, because your work that you did with Bruce Lipton on spontaneous evolution and your work in the area of politics to really look at a trans-political solution, something that does not exist at this point, that you've put your life energy into, so that we could create a way of, instead of either or and continuing to fall prey to the dualism that this dominant culture continues to reinforce. I'm so excited about the both and of Wikipolitiki.
I appreciate that. And thank you so much. And that's really the seed that I want people to kind of play with and expand on, is how powerful it is to not know. And to come into a situation as a learner without knowing what the outcome is going to be, and yet having the intention of having love prevail. And as you go to to Hollyhock and all of these other adventures where people are coming, the inspiration that they're coming for is the excitement of not knowing, the adventure of what the next 50 years is going to bring in the domain of education. I think all of us, or people who are listening, no matter what we hear about the dire new world situation that we find ourselves in, children, the light in children, it's the reason why I'm doing what I'm doing. Even though I'm not really directly working with children, it's wanting them to have a world and a life expectancy and the expectancy of fulfillment And finally, for the elders among us, Bruce Lipton just told me this a few weeks ago that, telomeres, that's our DNA strands that tend to diminish as we get older. One of the things that lengthens our telomeres, lengthens our lives, is service to other people. So there's something that must be kind of a survival and thrival trait. I want to thank you so much, Bill Moore, for joining us on Wiki Politiki. We'll be back again next week. TrimTab.in, go to that website, find out more about what Phil is doing. Book, go get it now, it's on Amazon. The Future of Children, what is the subtitle?
Providing a love-based education for every child.
A love-based education for every child. Thank you. This is Steve Fairman, Wiki Politiki, and we'll catch you.